We are back. It's still Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. This is Futures Power Hour, sponsored by CME Group. I'm your host, Chris Vecchio. He's Jamal Chandler. Jamal, happy Amazon earnings eve. These markets are a little jittery beforehand. Stocks are down. Bond yields are up. We're on the cusp of this macro and earnings storm.
We are. I can't wait for it, man. Things are moving all over the place. I think this is the best big week we're going to have probably for the next several weeks. So enjoy it.
Not just for the next several weeks, but feels like a psychologically defining week, if you will, between last week and this week with the bevy of earnings releases from the Fab 5 or Mag 7, whatever you want to call it, although Apple and Tesla probably don't deserve to be included in that group anymore. but you also think about non-farm payrolls and FOMC, a PCE. There's a lot for the markets to chew on and kind of figure out which direction is best. Yesterday, when we were talking about equity markets, even with the rally that was going on, was a good place to get long. And yeah, let me explain this morning, said it as well. Not really. You know, if you have to put anything on in this market, we're sitting in the middle of multi-month ranges. You're basically at the start of the day, 800 points from the yearly high and 800 points from the recent low. And NASDAQ, same thing, equidistant in the S&P 500 from the highs and lows. And so what are you really going to do here? Oh, vol's a little elevated. So maybe you put on a condor or strangle. Otherwise, are you really going to take a directional bet heading into this week? Probably not. And so this indecision we're seeing is not entirely unexpected. I've also heard some chatter through the grapevine today that one of the sticking points for Amazon's earnings today is whether or not they actually release a dividend announcement. We heard this from Google last week, of course. Yeah. Not only did they have good earnings, both top line and bottom line, but the dividend announcement propelled them in a way that we've seen it propel, say, Meta in recent years with their new dividend announcement. So will Amazon be next? This is a company that's seen its revenues basically triple from $22 billion up to $60-plus billion from where it was pre-pandemic. And so there's a case to be made there. Perhaps that's why this market is a little jittery. Amazon can give us really good numbers, but if they're not returning cash and capital to the shareholders, what good are they for us?
What good
are a little bit of a weak hand here. Who cares they were just at all-time highs? Give us more money.
Who cares they deliver you stuff all the time? Give me a cash dividend. I need something more tangible than what you're going to give me.
Yeah, call J.G. Wentworth. I need a cash settlement now. But for Amazon, I mean, that seems to be the bar here. And with some weak hands in this market, we're seeing some selling here today. Interestingly enough, what kicked off the selling this morning, Jamal, of all things? Of all things in this town, the employment cost index. I don't think we've ever talked about that before because it rarely, if ever, moves markets. But the Federal Reserve and those policymakers are Phillips curve economic theorists. They think that there is an inflation link with wages. And so if wage pressures are going up, which is what the ECI said this morning, then you have to presume policymakers think that inflation pressures are increasing as well. And that has problems for where we find ourselves with those rate cut odds, Jamal. That's the transition we're looking for, because here today, we've seen that Fed rate cut odds have taken a very sharp downward path once more. 9.9% chance of a 25 basis point rate cut in June, down from just north of 18% to where we were a week ago. The market is clearly pushing back the timing of these cuts. And it's proving to be an albatross around this market's neck right now, even though we're not favoring cuts for June, July, September. It's worth noting that when you look to bonds, for example, ZT has a 0.99 positive correlation with the SR3M4 and the SR3U4 contracts. And so if we still need to see a zeroing out of those rate cut odds in the short term, because there are still some lingering around the edges there for June, July, and September, it's an albatross around the bond market's neck right now. And so with a little bit of data that suggests that wage pressures are pointing higher, what do we see? Bonds, they come off the board. Stocks way down as well. We're heading into the May 1st FOMC meeting with expectations on the floor, and yet we still can go a little bit lower. Jamal, are you worried that Powell is going to deliver a hawkish hammer tomorrow when he kicks to the podium at 2:30 p.m. Eastern?
Oh, geez. I mean, I guess. I mean, but I also think he's going to say a lot of the same thing that he's been saying, and for good reason. I mean, it's been the same story. Like you mentioned, inflation has still been the thing that's affecting markets right now. I also happen to think part of the reason, I'm actually not that shocked by this move today. I feel like, you know, usually when you have a month and things haven't gone well in that month, we have a red month, essentially, by the time we get to the end of the month, we usually see some selling, and vice versa when we see buying pressure at the end of months where it's been a good month. So I'm also not that surprised to see the moves today, because it's not been a good month overall, and I think that begets more weakness at the end of the month. So you possibly have a hawkish message coming out of Powell with the chance for a turnaround tomorrow, just because we're coming on a new month and we're starting off. So you do have a possibility of that. I know that's just all guessing, but I just feel like that's kind of the way that this market is setting up right now.
I would argue the earnings releases are just as important, if not more, than what we're going to be seeing here from the Fed the next few days. To a certain extent, you can get to a place logically where here on April 30th or even tomorrow on May 1st, to take the possibility of a single rate cut off the board entirely for this year is a little premature. And so considering that we only have a 21.8% chance of a second 25 basis point rate cut priced in as of when I clip this chart off of our sponsor CME Group's website, I'll say that I think that it's going to be difficult for Powell to come out a little bit more hawkish than what's already on the table. We've already heard from Powell in recent weeks prior to the Fed's communication blackout window that they don't have the data in front of them to feel more confident about the path of inflation, which, you know, we can dissect this logically to try to read the Fed tea leaves here. January FOMC meeting at the end of that month, Powell says that the Fed does not have enough confidence yet to determine whether or not it's appropriate to start the cut cycle. And at that point in time, we had 6 months in a row of inflation data trending in the right direction, both, or rather among all, PCE, core PCE, CPI, and core CPI. Since then, it's been 3 months of data in the wrong direction. So one would presume that, let's just say we have 3 good months in a row, that basically brings us back to where we were in January, which at that point in time, we know wasn't enough to have the confidence to cut rates.
So let's just say, but it's really interesting that he said that in January, isn't it? Like, it really is. Ended up really, we thought that was nuts at the time. Like you said, it was 6 months of data that was showing.
Yeah. So then what's good? Is it eight? Is it nine? Is it a full year? Right. And everyone chided him. And now we've constantly said from last year, the Fed is going to fight the last war. They're probably going to leave rates higher for longer than they need to because they kept rates too low for too long. And yet that penchant to do so has actually probably saved the market from much more pain. Because if the Fed had started the cutting cycle in January and then you get 3 bad months in a row of inflation data, then the Fed looks like they made a mistake. The credibility isn't there. The market thinks the Fed does not have a sober mind or its hands on the steering wheel. And then you have an environment like 2022 where bond yields are going up, but stocks are going down with them, as opposed to what we've seen, which is stocks have been able to weather the storm because we think, yeah, inflation may not be going down, but we haven't started the cut cycle. And so at least we know that it's being addressed still. Okay, the adults are still in the room. But Jamal, I mean, I see this path forward, right? You know, we're going to need several months in a row here of good inflation data to just get us back to the point where the Fed was saying they weren't confident yet. And so we know they're less confident now. That means May, June, July, off the table. August, there's no Fed meeting. So by the time you get to the September meeting, do we think that we're back, you know, even if we have 3 good months in a row, are we going to be back to a point where the Fed wants to cut in September? Probably not. So all these odds need to get zeroed out for one cut for June, July, August, September, or June, July, September here. And that's if bonds retain their positive correlation with the SR3 contract, which at the short end, it makes sense they will. At the long end, it's not as much, but it's still very positive. ZB's rolling 1 month correlation with the SR3 contract right now, either M4 or U4, is 0.94 positive. So if these rate cut odds erode, it's probably going to be problematic for bonds to sustain any sort of meaningful bid. And so it's not a shock today when we see the ECI come in and push down those cut odds a little bit further. Bonds, they stumble. It's not a huge plunge, but they're not able to hold on to any sort of gains whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's again, it's been the same story. And we just have part of the resolution coming up on Wednesday. I mean, obviously you got the jobs report on Friday, which has also been a lot of what's been, you know, affecting rates as well. So yeah, I don't know. I have wondered about whether or not we do even get a rate cut at some point this year. And again, the only real damage is to bonds more than anything. I mean, stocks for the most part, other than a day like today, we usually see stocks kind of shrugging off the idea of rate cuts. So We got a lot of wood to chop ahead.
Jamal, as we look to these charts here for the first time on this Futures Power Hour, we think about those Amazon earnings coming up later today. Amazon is 5.4% of the NASDAQ, so it's a pretty significant component. Obviously, if that earnings report goes sour, the market's going to have a bad time. But technically, not much has changed here. We're sitting at 5,094.50 right now. Obviously, a fairly steep pullback for the S&P 500, sitting right around 1% right now. In fact, it's negative 1% right now here on the charts. We ran into that 2134 EMA envelope and we turned away. The goal here is to get through 5140, 5140, 5170 this week. You want to clear out the downtrend from the intra-month April swing highs. You want to clear out the neckline of the head and shoulders pattern. And until you do so, having staged the 100 point rally off the lows, what incentive was there to get long ahead of all this stuff this week? Yesterday, I laid out the case that if you're looking at this market because you're sitting in the middle of a range where you're about 100, you know, 60 points off the high and about 100 points off the low here in ES, and then in the NASDAQ, so it's about 800 each way, it made sense for Iron Condors. Being directionally bullish this week at resistance isn't really a smart play. This doesn't really change anything, though, for my bigger picture issue, Jamal, which is to say that because of the importance of last week, this week, between the earnings and all the macro things, the goal for bulls is simply to survive. You have to just maintain the move off of 49.64. And if you can do that and work your way through this week, you feel a little bit better going into next. And if you can do this week where you're above 51.70 and you've cleared out the neckline and you've cleared out the 2134 EMA envelope, and if you cleared out the downtrend from the April swing highs, then you feel a lot better. But right now, this is still kind of a no man's land. I mean, who wants to take a directional bet here ahead of all this stuff when you're sitting in the middle of what's been a multi-month sideways move?
Well, I bet the people who are willing to do it are the ones who think that even though Powell might come out with a hawkish message, is he really going to say anything new? Is he really going to say anything that we don't already know? Is he really going to tell us that there's obviously inflation in the economy? We already know that. Even the jobs report, if that comes in, you know, hot, I mean, that's also not a surprise. I don't know how much worse it could get at this point, honestly. And when I say worse, I mean, at the idea of I guess, you know, we've really kind of come around to this idea that if we don't get a rate cut, it's the worst thing that could happen. And it's really not, right? But it feels like it sometimes. And I think that's what we've seen. Different times where we have seen the markets react, we've kind of attributed to that. But yet there's been other times where the markets have continued to move higher and we're like, well, looks like markets are shrugging it off. So I think the market is still trying to figure out how it feels. Obviously, AI narratives have also just really haven't been worried about rate cuts at all. They could care less. So it's really something that we still haven't quite figured out what to make of it, I would say. And yeah, we did have the breakdown a couple of weeks ago. I'd be surprised if we really retest those lows outside of, you know, again, when we hit those lows, think about what was going on at the time. It was part of the rate cut stuff, but then it was obviously geopolitical combined. And so now that aspect seemingly has been removed from it. And we're just left with the rate cut stuff, which has really been the story for most of the year. And it's either been inflation or something related to job wages, which is again, inflation. So I agree with you. It's hard to make a case to get long, but at the same time, I think you got to go with the ebbs and flows of the market. And there will come a point where it's like, okay, you know, I'm interested in getting long. If we do fade hard enough, I actually had I have a SPX put butterfly on going back to last week when we had the big bullishness last week. So I think you got to, you know, you can find good ways to play the moves in the market because we are getting a sort of active market right now. Maybe you want to be a little bit more prudent. And sometimes when you're able to use those futures, which allow you to be capital efficient, but sometimes, again, if you're worried about the big moves like we're having today, maybe it's easier to try to find option ways to do it.
Jamal, technically getting rejected at the underside of this former support zone, which has flipped back into resistance. It's worth noting that the rally off the lows, that's still very much in play here. And so while support doesn't come into play at 50.72, I mean, there's two sides to that here. This is a market that could continue to fall. And yet the rally off the lows from where we were about a week and a half ago are still maintained. And then we can continue to rally up from there. And so getting too bared up right now, I mean, if you were short at 5150, great, you've caught the swing lower. But getting short here, like, do you want to get long here? No, because you may have 20 points to the downside, and if that doesn't hold, then the floor kind of opens up closer towards 5,000. Mm-hmm. So this is why I say this is kind of a gray man zone right now. If you're already long, are you being scared out of the market? Not necessarily. I'm not being scared out of the market on a pullback today. If do I want to get in long for the first time? No. I see the Condor as the best way to do this, quite frankly. Just, I know there's not a lot of vol on the board. 46.3 in the Nasdaq's not, you know, nothing. We were making the case for this yesterday. If the highs are 18,700 and the lows are 17,100, when you're sitting at 17,900, you're smack dab in the middle, more or less. And without having to place a directional bet around FOMC and Apple and Amazon and non-farm payrolls, there's a way to capitalize and go out there in the market and do that. So hopefully some people are to take advantage of that through the NQ contract or the triple Qs. But Amazon comes out today and let's say they deliver. What if it's another quarter like a Google or a Microsoft? Microsoft wasn't as good as Google, but what if it's a dividend announcement and we have a reaction like we did last Wednesday, mm-hmm. where the market just gaps open higher and just rips? You can't rule that out here. And so you're basically playing a crapshoot when you're taking a directional bet. What's the mood? Because it's not the earnings release themselves, Jamal, that matters. It's the perception about what's going to happen in the future, of course. We saw that with Tesla, bad earnings release. Great perceived outcomes for the future, stock rallies. And Meta, great earnings release.
Yeah.
Bad perceived outcome for the future. So it's hard to get too excited about this one way or the other. When in reality, once you get through this week, technically you have a better idea. Fundamentally, you have a kind of you understand what the new narrative is. The turning where you're trying to figure out that new narrative and that new regime always leads to a lot of two-way action. This is a two-way action market. So I can't get bothered to get too convicted on either side of the trade right now.
Yeah, I agree. No, you certainly don't want to get married to anything for too long right now. I think it's nice to be able to have these different moves to play. You got to be strategic about how you play them. I mean, even right now, like I just took a shot. If you heard the ding a little while ago, I took a shot on some MES futures down 50 here, down 1%. We'll see what happens. Like you said, I'm looking to see if maybe it'll jump another 20 points or if it'll fade another 20, then I'm out. I mean, but I think you have to be willing to make those type of plays because we are moving around. Because I can tell you now, come next week, I mean, next week I was looking at the calendar. There's really not much going on. You can imagine there's not going to be much action. So these are the weeks where you have the ability to make a little coin and you got to find strategic ways to do it.
You know, I was looking at the seasonal returns to the market. What happens if you have a red month of April? What happens moving forward? Some people on Twitter, X, tagged me in some of these posts as well. And usually the month of May is bad if the month of April is bad. And then you apply some of the caveats. Well, how is May perform usually? Well, usually it's been good. 10, 20, 50 years. Good month. Don't sell in May and go away. What about what happens if March was green and April is red? How does May do? Okay, it's not terrible. What if February and March are green and April is red? How about that May? And all of a sudden, when you put together the change, what if you have 5 months in a row that were green, like we just did, and then a red month of April? How does that May do? It's actually positive most of the time.
Yeah, I would almost expect negative.
No, the 1 month, 3 month, 6 month, and 12 month returns after you see 5 green months in a row and then a red one, 70 to 90% higher, depending upon what time frame you're looking at. That's happened 30 times in the S&P 500 since 1950. So this is not exactly a coin flip, nor is it a small sample size. 30 is a robust sample size. And so you have to figure, okay, yes, April may have scared some people, but then I go back to the sentiment check. This has been like the singular thing I've been talking about on air for the past like 6 or 7 days, which is how has the market been responding to earnings? Right? Because going into last week, companies over the past 5 years, on average, when you have a positive EPS surprise, which is defined as what happens in the 2 days before, 2 days after the earnings release, when you have a positive EPS surprise, the average share price was going up by 1%. A negative EPS surprise was being hammered to the tune of negative 2.3%. Again, that's the 5-year average. So going into last week, how are stocks doing in the first quarter? No change in share price for a positive EPS surprise, negative 6.1%. Drop on average for a negative EPS surprise, right? We get through last week. Where do we stand in aggregate for the first quarter now? things have gotten much better. Companies that are beating on average for the first quarter now gaining 1% with their positive EPS surprise. Companies that are missing with their negative EPS surprises, they're losing 2.5%. So in the span of a week, we went from being a very lopsided market where good news was not being rewarded and bad news was being absolutely flogged to back where it's kind of normal. Good news is being rewarded lightly because much of it's been priced in. After all, companies that are expected to do well, their shares tend to rally. And so when a company does beat, much of that's already expected. And but then companies that are missing, they are being punished. They're just not being punished as severely as they once were. And at negative 2.5% on average, that's not all that far off from the negative 2.3% average that we've seen over the past 5 years. So the reason I bring that up is as a sentiment check, the market has become much more favorable to how earnings are being perceived here. And so if you can get through Amazon and the market is up afterwards and Apple is up afterwards and the Fed doesn't scare everyone and non-farm payrolls doesn't scare everyone, then you fired all of your shots as a bear. And everything is kind of priced in that's negative. And so then what sling do you take out of your quiver just now? Like what's the next arrow that you fire to convince people to not deploy capital on the long side of this market? And that's the question that has to be asked. I have no answer for that this week. This week is a total black box for me. I have no idea what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I'm trading lightly because I have no idea what's going to happen. And I don't like placing directional bets in the middle of ranges. But this is the formative week for, I think, how people should be approaching narratives and trends. If that's something that you pay attention to or believe in, which I know many don't around here, but I do. And Jamal, I think you dabble in it now because of your approximation with me or association with me. But I think it's, yeah. I think this is like the defining week.
I don't mind knowing it. I don't mind knowing those type of things, but it's kind of, you know, I like to just accumulate a lot of different data, right? And I think I've just, this is maybe part of being a former scientist. I like to accumulate a lot of different data and be aware of those type of things. But at the end of the day, you know, I just eventually make a decision based off of what I see.
Yeah, and the reason why I bring this up is, you know, let's say this is a week where all of a sudden we're looking at the NASDAQ and we're back at like 17,400 at the end of the week and volatility is elevated. Just because we're getting close to support again from the April low, does that necessarily mean that's a place where I want to sell some puts, right? Yes, you're technically going into support. Yes, vol is elevated, but do you want to sell puts in there? I mean, maybe, but you know what? Let's say by the end of the week, we're up at 18K and vol has come back in. How do you feel as a bull then, where all this area through from the end of February through the middle of April, support, 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 and all of a sudden we find ourselves back over here? You're feeling a lot different. So I think just a little bit of time, 4 days. Jamal, you know, why would I want to put this on? All day today, mentally, besides spending 100% of my time focusing on work, I'm obviously thinking about how angry I'm going to be at Joel Embiid later tonight. And that seems like
I knew it was coming sooner or later. I knew it was coming. And, I actually didn't even see that foul that he did the other night. What do? He grabbed the guy?
Yeah, he ripped Mitchell and Embiid's on the floor. And Robinson's trying to get a rebound standing up in the, you know, protected area in the paint. In the restricted area. And he just, while he's on the floor, he pulls out Mitchell Robinson's legs from underneath him. And he gets called like a flagrant one. If that was anyone else, they're kicked out of the game.
I mean, yeah.
you can't just wrap your arms around some guy's legs and rip them out from underneath.
You can't kick the villain out of the game. The people need to see it. I mean, come on. You got to admit, life's a little bit better as a New York Knicks fan when you have somebody to hate in the playoffs. You know it.
Oh, plus, you know, I went to college outside of Philadelphia and a lot of my friends are, you know, from the Philly area as a result. And I want to beat the Sixers with Embiid in there because I'm going to hear all these whiny Sixers fans. Oh, yeah. Oh, we would have beat you if Embiid was healthy. Right. I don't know. No. Give us your best shot at Bell's palsy. Hope he gets better. I think it's nonsense. Yeah, likely excuse. Oh, now you're down in the hole 2-1, and now you have this mysterious medical diagnosis.
Tonight, this tonight, right?
7:00.
You guys are up 3-1, right?
We are.
Yeah. I think you guys might close it out tonight.
It's the gentleman's sweep. Right. You go back to the, you know, you're up 2-0, you have the home advantage, you go back to their arena, you let them get a win in front of their home fans, and then you take care of business. Right. Anyway, 17,700 here in the NASDAQ, Russell trading lower as well, 1996.6. naturally. This is actually starting to break the uptrend, and you could just see it here yesterday.
Let's talk about this Russell for a second, right? Because this Russell really stands to lose the most after tomorrow.
It does. Right? And it looks the ugliest, by the way, right now. Like, this uptrend already broke off the lows, whereas the S&P and the NASDAQ, it hasn't. It couldn't turn through the March 19th swing low. You see that failure up near 2032 yesterday. What's the like about this right now?
Nothing. I mean, what does Powell have to say tomorrow for the Russell to be like, oh, okay, we're going to be just fine and resume the march beyond 2000 once again? I mean, what possibly could be said to help the Russell? Even though we know we're in the midst of high inflation and a market where the job, where the an economy where the job market is completely hot, white hot. So these things are, you know, I mean, they're affecting obviously what's going on with interest rates and the fact that we'll be able to leave them higher for longer, which clearly is not that good for the Russell. But what could be said to help it?
I guess this isn't engineering the trade, but engineering the trade kind of. Like, if we had to engineer the Fed's policy statement to get the Russell higher tomorrow, what would we say? It's a fun thought experiment. Mm-hmm. I would talk about the robustness and the resilience of the U.S. economy.
Yeah.
I'd want to make sure.
Small companies.
Right. Focus on like, hey, the U.S. economy is resilient, robust. The labor market remains strong. And some of that's BS because you look at like NFIB, the National Federation of Small Businesses, and their hiring survey intentions, they're starting to go south. But you would say this, you would say that the, you know, Main Street economy is doing very well. And part of the reason why inflation pressures have gone up is because of how strong the economy is. And therefore, Federal Reserve officials are in no rush to cut rates for what they believe is a good reason. Now, like, talk up the environment of us not cutting rates isn't a bad thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you'd have to do. But if they come out tomorrow and say, hey, the economy's getting worse and inflation's turning higher, then you're going to hear the S word, stagflation.
Oh, God. Then you got to sell the Russell and you got to get short covers.
Bonds, short the stocks. Jeez.
Yeah, that would be bad. That would be really bad.
Long spam and hot dogs.
Yeah.
Vecchio Hassel diet on red trading days.
Spam,
nothing healthy.
Spam is like the worst. That's an abomination, man. I feel bad that I even ate that at one point in time in life.
Cut it up, put it in the pan and fry it.
Oh,
trust me,
that spam sandwich. Yeah, it's rough for the Russell these days. I mean, you know, I'm still short actually some Russell in the form of IWM, but I'm short some puts, I think. Actually, I turned it into a strangle at some point in time after last week's move, but yeah, I'm not sure what to make of it.
Well, one of the reasons why the Russell may be having the problems that it's having is because of what's going on in bonds. Go over to ZN, and we talked about the correlations earlier, the push lower in Fed rate cut odds in the SR3, M4, and U4, U being September expiry. And, you know, it makes sense to think about those in those specific time frame terms, because each of those months for the expiries, you happen to get the Fed summary of economic projections, a re-anchoring of how the market perceives where the Fed may go on rates. So when we look out to U4, we're seeing that deteriorate today and across the curve, ZN, ZB, everywhere you look, we're barely budging. Now, new lows aren't in place, but we're getting pretty close to what could be considered an ominous signal on a technical basis. I say that because we did move above yesterday's high, and we're getting close to moving below yesterday's low, where if we were to close here, we'd close below yesterday's low, which is 107 and 18 and a half ticks. We're currently sitting at 107 and 18 and a half ticks. That would be an outside engulfing bar, and it would signal that whatever recent bounce we had is probably finished, which isn't exactly great news. Momentum here is effectively dead. You know, we're seeing stochastics poke its head out of oversold territory, if only because the market hasn't gone anywhere. Not exactly a sign of strength happening. It's almost the exact opposite thing that you see in a rally, Jamal. Like when you have a robust rally and the market pauses, you can think about ES in December. The momentum indicators move out of their overbought territory, but prices don't come back in. It's almost like the market's digesting the overbought reading through time rather than a correction in price. And then the next leg goes up. And so, yes, the momentum indicators are getting less negative here, but it's not with any associated rally in price right now. So it's difficult to look at this and say, this is the low. this is a low. I'm looking for a way to get long and a reason to be long. And I think about those deteriorating cut odds, and I look at the volatility at 25.7 here in ZN, or even in ZB where it's 19.9. And I say, why would I try to sell puts right now and catch a falling knife? If anything, the rallies are going to be short-circuited every single time.
Yeah, it feels like in both of them, we're in an interesting area. We're kind of been kind of treading water. I mean, that's kind of what it looks like. And I think we're going to get a determination on the next move this week for sure. Honestly, I don't know what direction it's going to be. Theoretically, yeah, I feel like, you know, given what we're expected to hear, that it should be another leg lower. But I don't know. Sometimes these markets have a tendency to surprise you for whatever different reason. So we're also kind of in a no man's land. We'll see what happens. I really have no idea what the next move is going to be. I could easily say, yeah, it's probably going to be lower because it's probably going to be a hawkish message, and jobs report is probably going to come in hot, but who knows? Who really knows?
Jamal, I want to point out one thing here in the kind of the nature of this technical indicator right now and how it's relating to price, just to put some meat on the bone of why I think it's a difficult time to try to get long bonds still. Ever since we break down in the middle of March, stochastics haven't risen above 50. And every time we've seen a little bit of an exit from that oversold territory, it's been a false start that a low's coming into place. We've seen this a few times now where if you try to get long, okay, momentum is finally turning positive. Within a day or two, the market immediately keels back over. Mm-hmm. Until that changes, until we see that we're out of the lower half of the indicator panel, it's difficult to think that there's really any semblance of a low put into place. Again, not a hard and fast rule for stochastics. It's just the characteristic of the indicator during this specific period of decline. And so as a signal that the market is getting ready to bottom, I'd want to see the behavior of this indicator change as well. And right now, it's not. And the IVs aren't great either, right? When you look to gold or silver, even though the volatilities have come back in, the vols are higher. Even oil vol is a little bit higher. Natural gas vol is higher. Basically, every currency vol is higher. You can play a rate story through the currency market right now and have a lot more action. So I just think bonds are dead. They have the continued problem of oil prices lingering around at elevated levels, even though they're not north of 85 anymore. They're still up there. And now these rate cut odds need to erode for June, July, and September. So albatross around the bond market neck. I know some people around here are trying to get long right now. I'd rather look to sell rallies and pops than try to get long at this time.
Yeah, it's not, well, I think we're going to get some resolution this week. I would imagine. We'll see.
Tomorrow's a big day for bonds, by the way, folks, because we have the Treasury refunding announcement tomorrow morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern, 7:30 a.m. Central Time. We're also going to have the Fed meeting, the policy statement out at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central Time, and then Fed Chair Powell's press conference, 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 1:30 Central Time. So, Jamal, bonds very much in the spotlight tomorrow. We've seen how the QRA has impacted the bond market in many recent weeks and months, particularly as the Treasury continues to run these wartime deficits during, well, I guess we're in two wars right now, but it's not a world war, even though the wars are being fought all over the world. Anyway, we're running wartime deficits here in the U.S., which is one of the reasons why the economy is growing so strong. And the Treasury's had to issue a lot of debt to pay for those bills. We'll see what happens tomorrow morning. Metals dented on.
You sprinkle in ADP and JOLTS as well. So a couple other data points.
You know, ADP is so funny. Goldman continues to update this series of notes that they've had, how basically ADP has been an inverse indicator to non-farm payrolls for the past year, how when ADP is better than economists' expectations, NFP has been missing the consensus forecast, and when ADP is worse than expectations, NFP has been beating consensus forecasts. So I guess, you know, if it's right wrong all the time, it is still useful as an indicator. You know, it tells you what not to do. So do I care about ADP? Yes, but almost in like a very cheeky, this is kind of a joke.
Oh yeah.
Kind of way.
I mean, honestly, I feel like that for sure about ADP and JOLTS, honestly, even though they have moved markets, to be fair, JOLTS specifically has moved markets. We've seen that in recent months, not every single time, but I just still can't, even though it's been a solid year and change or longer at this point that we've been paying attention to these numbers and in concert with the jobs report, I still can't wrap my head around the fact that we're paying attention to these. Cause like we've said, for the bulk of our career, we've never really paid much attention to ADP or JOLTS, like at all. And so I still think of them as a joke, but you know, it is what it is.
ADP was something that we did pay attention to, like that and ISM services. You could get the 3 month change in the 10-year yield. You could get like a decent and this is not today anymore, but like 10 years ago, you could get a decent approximation for non-farm payrolls. And now you can't. But JOLTS was never something I ever looked at or was even taught to look at because job openings were fairly stable enough. They ebbed and flowed. It was a little bit coming out of the pandemic, obviously very different. But Jamal, let's turn our attention to gold and silver today, which say they've been dented on the margins, but literally on margins. Chinese Shanghai Metals Exchange changed margins at the start of the week. And so there's been a lot of forced deleveraging. Interestingly enough, off the charts on Friday, we highlighted the Chinese retail buying of gold recently. One of the reasons why we highlighted this is for a potential Chinese yuan devaluation that may be coming up around the corner. We've laid out the theory that why is China accumulating all this gold? If you look at what happened with Russia after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, they're cut out of the Western financial system. And so as a way to get around potential future sanctions because of, say, an invasion of Taiwan, maybe China's hoarding all these commodities, all these metals for the eventuality of them being cut out of the system as well. A more benign explanation is the fact that they're getting ready for another yuan devaluation. So they're buying everything up now. They're building up their crude inventories, their iron ore, nickel, copper inventories, gold inventories for the central bank, because they know at a point in the future, the currency is going to be weaker by 10 to 20% overnight. And if it's going to be weaker by 10 to 20% overnight, then that means that the cost of importing all this stuff that you need to build your country and keep the economy running is going to be more expensive by 10 to 20% overnight. So stockpile and hoard now in anticipation of a devaluation. Chinese retail gold traders took notice of this and have been buying gold hand over fist recently. This is the first chart. If people go to the news and insights tab on tastylive.com, you go down to the last Friday piece, the image on it is a picture of me with some candlesticks. And it's the first chart in that series of five. And so the Chinese, one of the Chinese metals exchanges jacks up margins to kind of squeeze speculators here at the start of the week. Gold and silver are taking a big leg down here today. Though they actually really haven't broken through any sort of technical support yet. We're still sitting in this 2134 EMA envelope. We're sitting right near the low that we had from last week, Jamal, which was $2,304. We're sitting at $2,302. But this is a move that is not necessarily tied to any fundamentals, what's happening with the dollar, any expectations around inflation. This seems like a one-off shock to the market where it doesn't detract from any sort of long-standing view that I have, even as someone who recently put back on a long silver position.
Yeah, I thought the big bar from last week too was related to margins domestically. I thought
yes, that
was
CME.
Yeah, so it seems to be that's the only thing to derail the gold move. Honestly, I'm not sure what to think here. I mean, to be honest with you, when I see this, it makes me think this is the beginning of a breakdown. But obviously you see it landing on support there. So I don't necessarily know if I'd be willing to go out and get short here, but it is kind of an ominous move that we've seen right there. So I don't know. I know it hasn't derailed you. You're still a bull. I know you're still staying there. I have no
position now.
At this point. No directional position. I do have on gold GC Iron Condors, or just one, honestly, Iron Condor and GC, but that's it. Just trying to take advantage of Vol coming in. I think Vol has come in a little bit on this move to some degree, but I have no position. I have no real decision on direction right now. I'm not sure what to make. Because again, like you said, it's not related to anything that you would expect, whether what's going on with the hawkish matches potentially or bonds. It's just really sort of this move related to what's going on with margins. And those are people that, like, trying to get out for now.
Silver is a little bit more of a daunting technical picture, which does not make me feel good because it is through the 2134 EMA envelope. And it's also moving below the swing high that you had at the start of December. That's not good. So this may be a day where I decide to cut short my exposure in the market, but it doesn't deter me long term. I would just look for a new level of basing and some sort of indication that this correction is finished. Obviously, the 2134 EMA envelope is not holding up this time as it did at the end of March, beginning of April, but I'll wait for the daily close, and this may be a loss. And incidentally enough, in choosing not to chase, which was the wrong decision, and then being patient and getting back in, being the prudent, disciplined trader has hurt me here. But that does not mean that I won't be prudent and disciplined in the future, because you have to just trust your process. And it was not trusting the process in the first place that put me in the quagmire of not being long when I should have been. So we'll see what happens here. I would have been long again anyhow, right? You just play the breakout, you play the trend. Eventually, one of the trend breakouts doesn't work. Like an ES, the fifth or sixth trade that time in the chain since October didn't work. This would have been number three, wouldn't have worked. Unfortunately, I didn't catch number two. So 50-50 right now on how the silver trade has worked on the long side since the February position was initiated. Today may be a day to pull the ripcord. I will look for basing because gold and silver long-term still look great just because you're changing margin requirements. It's kind of like banning short selling. When you hear regulators ban short selling when the market's fallen 20% or so in the span of a few weeks, you're like, that's not really going to fix anything, is it? It's just, it's not really addressing, you know, it's like, oh my God, crime rates are up. We should outlaw murder. Oh, thank you for outlawing murder. Right? Like, that's not going to change the underlying problem, which is there are probably some serious policy and economic issues that are driving investors to the sidelines. In any event, Jamal, I think far more interesting story than gold or silver is what's happening in energy still. I wanted to put on a position yesterday to have something on the table that kind of diversifies what I have in the active trading component of the portfolio away from anything rate sensitive. And so obviously the first thing that I had to go to was natural gas, which as of this morning, I saw that I was filled in while we were on, let me explain, the 1719 put spread.
Okay.
So I'm taking a little bit of a stab here. I'm not crazy on the bull side, right? I couldn't help but notice this yesterday, but if you go back to last spring here in NGM, let's go to All right. End of February last year, beginning of March, you get a big rally in natural gas, only to decline in March and April. And then April is basically the slinking where we begin this sideways move for many, many months. Here again, in natural gas, at the end of March or end of February, going into March, you have this big rally where then you decline for the rest of March, and then you start slumping and slinking around throughout the month of April. So it feels like it's a very similar type of price action environment. And to that degree, it doesn't necessarily mean that I want to be long. It's just that maybe there's been a floor found, kind of how like there was a floor found if you're looking at the NGM4 contract right now. All of last year, the floor was found right around $3. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a floor being found right around 190 again. If the price action, again, late February rally, peak in early March, decline the rest of the month, trade sideways here. Maybe there's a floor being found around 190. So having something on with the Fed, the Amazon, Apple earnings, NFP coming up, I like putting this on here. Obviously, today's price action isn't great, but I was able to get in at a better fill than I was trying to get in yesterday afternoon. So I'm not too mad about that. But that's really the game plan right now. If we get below the lows that we've carved out in the contract over the past 2 weeks, then I'll say sayonara to the position. Otherwise, happy to have something on that is not macro earnings centric.
It's not macro earnings. It's not rate sensitive. I know there is something to
be said. It's nothing.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that. It does seem like it's kind of hovering around that 190 level when it does fail, and it doesn't seem to breach to that, at least as of yet. So Godspeed, my friend. Hopefully it works out.
Godspeed. You know, what do you say to someone who's playing CeeLo, right? Like, is there any real strategy here? Feels like we're playing CeeLo whenever we get into natural gas. And yeah, but again, the approach is different than where we were in February. This is only the second trade we've taken into natural gas this year. At that time, you had a really significant bullish engulfing bar on February 20th, and it was after an exhaustion point where you had seen the shorts in the futures market rise back to a level commencement on par with what you saw in the middle of December that produced the low. And so you had some things that had lined up to say, okay, technically, positioning-wise, we could see a little bit of a squeeze higher here and get a bounce. Those things have not appeared on the board just now. So instead of doing it this time with long call spreads, the short put spread seems a little bit better app because it's not an outright bullish point of view. It's more of just this thing probably has a floor underneath it for now. Let's stop the falling. Jamal, do you have anything going on in crude? I know you've been active in CLM, CL in recent weeks. There was a rally earlier. We've actually now pulled back over the course of the day after the OPEC news. Not really doing much of anything over the past week, net, net.
Yeah, same. I don't have anything now. I think the last, I don't know if it was the last time we talked, or maybe it was sometime last week, actually. Maybe I think it might've been early last week, early Tuesday. I got out of the long crude that I had. Just feeling like, again, most of it was because I was long the event, right? Or long the risk, what was going on, the geopolitical risk. And as it's calmed down, I took the position off. And a lot of the reason I was long it was, well, in the event that something was going on there, markets and equities were declining at a rapid rate. And I have a lot of those on, a lot of it is short puts. And so being long oil, being long bonds, in the which we had seen like the times where market had gotten scared, those had taken off. We saw that specifically a couple of weeks back. So that was kind of the reason. It was somewhat of a portfolio hedge, surprisingly. And once that kind of that idea faded, so did the position. So I got out. I don't have anything right now. Been thinking about it at these levels, but hadn't pulled the trigger yet.
I'm waiting to see if maybe this topping pattern comes together a little bit more up here, get a little bit more confidence behind a position, because you can see the September 23 high very plainly. And it's, you know, people say technical analysis doesn't matter. Perhaps it's very self-fulfilling at the end of the day. And that can be enough. Enough people believe in something, it probably impacts the world. And I'll say that here, you see the September 23 high resistance become support for much of April. And then once we broke down below it on the 16th, it has served as resistance here henceforth. It's not the prettiest looking thing in the world, Jamal, but if I'm a bear, I can absolutely convince myself into saying that this is a left shoulder ahead, a right shoulder here forming on these lower term timeframes. If you look to a 4 hour or an 8 hour chart as we're looking at here right now, but here you are, there's your potential head and shoulders pattern. It's failing below the September high. You also have the fact that when you go to the weekly chart and you look at the June 22, September 23 highs, okay, we're starting to fail below that trend line as well. This comes after the evening star candlestick topping pattern on the weekly timeframe. So you start to put together this puzzle and you're feeling a little good. You're feeling a little good if you're bearish on oil right now. The chart's starting to come together. The geopolitical risk premium's out of the market. We're not there just yet, but down below last week's low of $80.70, you know, it's as the late Carl Weathers might say in Arrested Development, like, toss that in a stew, now we're cooking. So it's patience here. We're getting close perhaps to a top forming in oil.
Well, yeah, we'll see.
We will see. How would you play it though? Would you do selling calls, 21.2 IVR?
No, that doesn't really interest me as much. Honestly, it would be MCL. It's so liquid and it's, you know, it's really not that expensive. So I would use that contract for any, that's basically what I use the most. The times where vol is really high, then I go into the CL contract and trade, you know, options, usually condo or something like that. But for the most part, when I want to trade direction, it's MCL. Like, why not? It's super liquid.
That makes a good deal of sense, right? Same thing for MGC. Mm-hmm. So when you want to get short gold, if it's a high vol environment and prices are rallying, that double whammy of the convexity with gold prices and volatility can hurt you. So if you want to get short, it's better to do it through MGC as a retail trader, in my opinion. I think same thing here in crude as well. Selling call spreads right now when vol is this low, and given the fact that the recent leg up in crude oil was accompanied by that rise in volatility thanks to those geopolitical risks, I think MCL is the right way to do it. So I'll join you there, Jamal. Give me below $80.70 here in the CLM4 contract, and I will be laying in an MCL short position outright. No options, just the plain futures. Jamal, it's time to talk about the yen.
That's pretty good.
Keeps disappearing.
I got out last week. I was done. Couldn't do it. Couldn't do it anymore, and I'm glad I did.
I'm glad you didn't either, because they intervened yesterday. And all we got for it was a return back to last week's closing low as of where we stand right now. Not quite, but close enough. 0063, 88.5. We're at 0063, 92. What's four pips between friends in this market? Not much of anything. There seems to be a strong defense of the 160.40 line in the spot market in dollar yen, the high that you have from 1990. And that more or less equates to where the lows were this week, depending upon what contract you're looking at. But you're effectively looking at like 0062.75, we'll call it. And that's where the market is effectively saying the line in the sand is here. That's why, even though you've had an elevated vol environment, trying to call the lows in the yen, let's go out 38 days. Let's go to a short put vertical here. And let's just go below the current price.
Well, I was going to ask you, short put or short upside? I mean, I know there's a chance. Obviously, it's at serious lows for it to bounce, but hell, that hasn't happened. I mean, you know, like, I don't know, which one do you love more, short put spread or short call spread?
I don't love either, honestly. I mean, I think that if you get a, I think the prudent thing to do, quite frankly, I mean, there's really two ways to play this. Maybe it's kind of like a calendar spread. Because what you would want to do, if you're nimble enough, and my wife's like, why are you in your office? It's like 9 o'clock, come downstairs and watch a movie. I'm like, yeah, but UEDA might intervene tonight. You don't get it. Because if they do intervene with yield still pointing higher and oil doing what it's doing, it's difficult for them to see any sustained bounce, because you're just giving traders a better level to short the market, because traders have the weekend tailwinds at their back. Now, if oil gets below 80-70, bonds probably get a little bit of breathing room, a breathing room that I'd want to fade in bonds ultimately, because I don't think the Fed is going to be cutting in June, July, or September, and those cut odds need to come off the board. But if oil comes off and bond yields start to go down, then the BOJ and Ministry of Finance may say, you know what, we got to take advantage of this while we can, because these are the conditions that don't hurt the yen. So in the short term, you'd want to find a way to have some sort of long exposure. And for convexity wise, it might be a long at the money call spread, because I don't feel like you're being rewarded here. What if the market challenges 160.40 in the spot market and it breaks? You're looking at a probability of profit right now of 78%, max profit 125, yeah. Max loss of negative 500. If you're doing the 62.5 put spread here. And so you're making a bet. Are you like, is that the bet you want to make, that we're not going to let the 1990 high break? The market's effectively saying the odds of that happening are extremely low, 22% chance. I don't see that as a great risk to reward. I'd rather be long the call spread short term, hoping to catch an intervention wind. And then once we intervene, flip that and sell the call spread immediately.
And out of money call spread. That for a long time and that didn't work out.
That's fair.
And you're right.
It has to be night of. So if you're not paying attention to it, by the time it happened, like yesterday morning, by the time I woke up, I was like, damn it, I missed the intervention move. And sure enough, we're down today.
It looks like it just gave them a better level to short.
that's really all there is to it. So if you're not catching it, chasing it in this environment is very, very difficult. And yeah, vol's coming off the board, and maybe they're trying to shake out some speculators here. But until oil keels over and bond yields come off the board, it's going to be difficult for the yen to rally. It hurts the terms of trade. It hurts the interest rate differentials. And Ueda has been doing them no favors. He said in recent days that they're not concerned about the currency movement. So it doesn't make it seem like this is a level that's going to stick around for a little while. Again, you're at the 1990 low in the yen, so there's some defense of it here among traders, people taking profits, people making bets that there's going to be some intervention effort. Maybe there was yesterday. Either way, though, currency vol is high. 6A here as well. 132.7, Jamal. We can go over to the British pound, 56.9, even in the euro, 56.7. The point is, currency, when you look to this, we can just go over to, say, the Aussie dollar here. Even with this high vol environment, I would encourage people maybe to think about dipping their toes in the water. Not only is it higher vol than what you're seeing in, at least in the yen, for example, than in equity markets, depending upon the time frame, it's relatively small amounts. Buying power effective is a few hundred bucks. Max profit, max loss, relatively reasonable for a retail trader. It's a good way to dip your toes into the futures market. And we never see this kind of vol in FX, not for persistent periods of time. So for me, while I'm trying to avoid much of the noise this week around the Fed, I also think that it's a week that you can't ignore in FX, because you never see these opportunities far too frequently, or you don't see these opportunities far too frequently. So don't look a gift horse in the mouth, strike while the iron's hot. Period, end of story.
So real quick, just your thoughts. Like, not, this is not, we're not, you know, so I recommend anything. Just your thoughts on a quick trading cocktail to have for some of these currencies. What would you trade a put spread in? What, like, this 6A, well, would you trade put spread or would you trade call spread?
No. I would actually prefer to, just because of how high vol is, I'd rather just blow out on a strangle here or a condor outside of the lows and highs that we've seen for the year, going back to last October and the highs that we saw at the end of December. In the euro, I'm still holding on to a short put spread. It's a little out of the money right now. And you can see here, 1 month moving average, where does it come into? Swing lows that you have in February here in the beginning of April. And that's where the resistance is found. Former support turned resistance right into that 1 month moving average. So that's not what I wanted to see. Mm-hmm. Yesterday it looked like, right? So I'm comfortable there still. But if we can survive, again, survival. If we can survive this week through the Fed, through non-farm payrolls, what else is going to catalyze the dollar to go higher moving forward? You're going to have to see the elimination of a Fed cut this year.
Yeah.
And it's just too soon to say that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So maybe the catalysts are exhausted short term. Not to say that we're not going to go lower in the euro, but maybe the catalysts are exhausted in the short term. Technically, it still looks like crap. So, you know, maybe I don't know what I'm doing. But Jamal, that's another story for another day, because we need to talk about this very busy calendar for tomorrow. PMIs from Europe, from the UK, from the US. In the morning, ADP. We're going to have the refunding announcement from the Treasury. Who can forget ISM manufacturing, construction spending, and then the Fed meeting, Fed Chair Powell press conference. Macro risk all day long, a good day to start the new month. Jamal, as we do at the end of every one of these shows, we do a quick, my tongue today, not working, a quick look at education. Today we are talking order entry mechanics. Go to tastylive.com, top banner, learn beginner futures, to find this great coursework put together by the fine folks on the Tasty Live research team. When we talk about order entries, a market order is used to execute a futures trade at, you guessed it, the current market price. A limit order is a buy order that is below the current market price, or a sell order that is above the current market price. To go learn more, head over to tastylive.com, top banner, learn beginner futures, or simply click the link here at the bottom of that slide. It will take you there directly. Jamal, I can see the hook coming from the stage right. We are running over, so we're going to call this a quick exit here. I'll see you on the other side of FOMC, my friend, and ahead of those Apple earnings. But for Jamal Chandler, I've been Chris Vecchio. This has been Futures Power Hour, sponsored by CME Group. See you tomorrow, same time, same place here on Tasty Live. Until then, up next, after a brief break, you're going to have some more Tasty Live with Dr. Jim Schultz with From Theory to Practice.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Live Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.